Wind energy is continuing to see record growth in the U.S. with one of its best quarters ever. I'm Robert Colangelo, and this is GreenSense, where we explore eco-innovations paving the way for a more sustainable world. The American Wind Association, AWEA, just released its report on wind energy, and it's looking encouraging. We're joined by John Hensley, President of Research and Analytics. John, welcome to GreenSense.
Hey, Robert. Thanks for having me on.
John, let's get into it and discuss why the third quarter is one of the best for the wind industry. And I want to hit 4 points, wind project installations, wind capacity under construction, wind power procurement, and lastly, turbine technology. So let's first start with wind project installations. Why was that the best?
Yeah, so for a couple of reasons. So first of all, we had our best third quarter on record. We installed just under 2 gigawatts of new wind power across the country. And what I think is even more encouraging is that we're on pace to set a full year record here in 2020. Now, this has been expected for a couple of years now, but it's nice to see it come to fruition, especially given some of the COVID-19 disruptions that we've seen and you know, watching the industry work through a lot of those disruptions, find good solutions, keep their workforce healthy and safe, but also continue to hit these major milestones. And as a result, you know, we're looking for a great year in 2020 and hope to keep that momentum going into 2021.
Why were there so many installations done this quarter?
Yeah, so, you know, for a couple of reasons, 2020 has been expected to be a large year for a while now. And some of that has to do with the federal tax credits that are in place to help support the industry. And a lot of it has to do with just timing for projects. So, you know, these are going in some places very cold and wintry places. And so folks are trying to get the projects across the finish line before winter sets in. Though, you know, we still expect the fourth quarter this year to be the biggest part of 2020. So still a lot more to come in 2020 itself.
How much wind energy potential is there in the U.S. and are we even close to reaching it?
Oh, that's a great question. We've got some stats on that. I can't recall off the top of my head because they are so large. You know, there's essentially enough wind resource across the country to power all of our economy many, many, many times over. So it's really not a question of the availability of wind to help power the country. There are other challenges that I think are more limiting, such as transmission infrastructure. You need the poles and wires to actually be able to deliver that wind resource to the folks who are trying to use the electricity, siting and permitting, you know, actually trying to get permits and siting approval to move forward on projects. And then of course, just, you know, finding landowners and in some cases trying to work with the federal government or state agencies to, you know, sign up land at a local level to actually get the projects moving forward. So those are more the challenges rather than the actual resource.
So maybe you could answer it in another way and give your best estimate with you being an expert in this is, you know, if I was looking at the oil industry and I knew total reserves and how much had been exploited, I could have a percent of capacity. Can you give an idea of how much we've tapped into wind and how much potential there still is?
Yeah, so I'll give you a sense here. We're currently at 111 gigawatts of wind across the country. By some estimates that the National Renewable Energy Laboratory has done, there are 10,000 gigawatts of total wind potential across the country. So we really haven't even started to scratch the surface in terms of accessing all that wind resource.
So still at the beginning of the beginning.
Still very much at the beginning.
That's great news. Well, let's move on to the next one. Wind capacity under construction and an advanced development. What happened this quarter in that area?
Yeah, so we continue to see a really strong pipeline, over 43 gigawatts of projects that are, again, either under construction or in advanced development. And that stayed up kind of near record levels over the past couple of quarters and years. You know, one of the encouraging signs that we always try to look for is how quickly refreshed that pipeline is. That gives us some indicator of, you know, how many new projects are moving into the construction stage or signing up power purchase agreements or setting turbine orders and the like. So it's encouraging to, even though we're having a record quarter in the third quarter here, it's encouraging to see that number continue to stay pretty lofty. And we hope to expect to see that continue.
So when I hear gigawatt, I think of Back to the Future. I use that term to power the vehicle. So to just put that in context for people that aren't in the industry, how many homes does a gigawatt power in a year?
Oh, that's a great question. Let me give you a high level sense, and I'll try to bring it back down to the gigawatt level. But we usually end up talking about this in terms of how many homes can be powered by the fleet that's out there. So as I mentioned today, we've got around 112 gigawatts of wind on the system. And that 112 gigawatts is sufficient to power 34 million American homes. So it's a pretty incredible amount of power that's coming off of these guys every day. For kind of your new turbine that's going in, if you're thinking about how much does a new gigawatt today power, I'm just kind of trying to quickly do the math in my head here, and you're talking something on the order of 400 to 500,000 homes per gigawatt. So it's a pretty incredible amount of energy that's generated off these turbines.
Yeah, thanks for putting that in context, because these are big numbers we're throwing around, and for those that aren't in the business, it's good to give it some context.
Yeah, one great stat that I came across yesterday: GE's been working on their new offshore wind turbine platform, and they've set a couple of recent records. But one of the stats that really jumped out to me was one single revolution of their new offshore turbine will power a home for 2 days.
Wow. That's
just one turn is 2 days. Yeah.
That's
pretty incredible.
Good context. Well, let's talk about the next area. That's wind power procurement activity. Tell us what that is and how did that do this quarter?
Yeah. So that's another good leading indicator. That gives us a sense of how many new customers are coming to the table and signing contracts to basically procure energy from wind projects. Again, in the third quarter, we saw some encouraging development. We saw 743 megawatts of new PPA signed in the third quarter, which brings us close to 5 gigawatts of new PPAs for the year. One of the things that we were a little bit concerned about in the second quarter is that we saw a kind of a big drop off in what we call corporate PPAs. And there's been a lot of focus on these lately. These are those contracts where you see companies like Google, T-Mobile, Apple, Walmart, kind of these everyday Fortune 500 companies that we all interact with, signing power purchase agreements to power their businesses with wind. And unfortunately, as a result of some of the concern and risk around COVID, we saw those numbers drop off in the second quarter. But thankfully, we saw them rebound here in the third quarter. So we saw them sign the vast majority of that 743 megawatts of new PPAs. And we've even seen some new customers come to the table. Verizon, who signed their first PPA earlier this year for wind, signed a couple of more. So it's nice to kind of fully round out the telecoms industry, Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, and Sprint have all signed PPAs. So it's kind of cool to see that industry moving heavily forward.
That is impressive. The last category was turbine technology trends, and I see that GE is leading turbine installations. Talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so GE continues to lead turbine installations in 2020. They have been kind of the dominant turbine OEM in the U.S. wind industry for a long time, though in recent years they've traded places with Vestas off and on. But really, GE, Vestas, Siemens Gamesa Renewable Energy, and Nordex are kind of the main turbine manufacturers in the country. What I think is a little bit, one of the things that we like to focus on is the evolution of the technology, and we're continuing to see that play out this year If you think back a couple of years ago, your average wind turbine was something on the order of 1.5 megawatts, and it sat on an 80-meter tower. Today, we're seeing 4-megawatt and 5-megawatt wind turbine platforms being announced across the country with, you know, taller towers that they're utilizing to get up into the heavier wind speed sites. And they're also using longer blades to capture more of the wind energy that's coming by. And this translates into a lower cost of energy. So this is one of the ways that the industry is continued to become increasingly competitive by driving down the cost of generation.
The other day I was driving down the street and we're near a port where the wind turbine blades come in. And I got behind one of the trucks transporting it. It's amazing how long one of those turbine blades is. And the feet just to transport it. It took a lot of cars to stop traffic. It took a utility company truck to make sure that they could raise any utility lines. And it took a very special vehicle. So it's an amazing amount of people that get hired here that you just don't think about typically in this wind energy. Let's talk about some of the challenges, which perusing the report, it seems a lot of it comes down to financing and tax equity. Why don't you dive into that a little bit and tell us where you see the major challenges have been?
Yeah, so I'll focus on tax equity to start with, because that's been, you know, something that we've tried to work through. So in 2020, you know, one of the major challenges that we saw arise out of COVID-19 was delays across the entire supply chain. And the reason that's a particular concern in 2020 is that many of these projects needed to be online by the end of the year to qualify for tax credits that are provided to the industry. Fortunately, we as an industry worked with Treasury and IRS to extend that deadline for 1 year for a certain subsegment of those projects, which added a ton of you know, flexibility for these projects that were experiencing these delays that you know, put the financing and the economics of the project at risk. So that's, you know, that's been an encouraging improvement that we've seen this year. Nonetheless, you know, one of the big uncertainties at the moment is the tax equity markets. Essentially, you know, these projects do generate a fair number of tax credits, and we often need partners from the investment community to invest in these projects and to be able to monetize those tax credits. And with, you know, the economic downturn and, you know, potential revenues at those investment companies being at risk, there's just a smaller supply of tax equity investors or ability to consume those tax credits. So one of the things that we've been really focused on is this concept of direct pay, where instead of, you know, using the tax credits to offset your tax liabilities as a company, you're actually just paid out the tax credit as a payment from the Treasury or IRS. To the government, the net effect is the same. Instead of not receiving that tax money from certain companies, they're instead just paying it out to the projects, which can, you know, really help to reduce some of the transactional costs associated with these projects. So that's been one thing that we've been trying to move forward. But there are a lot of other risks out there for this industry. You know, we talked about transmission earlier. That continues to be a big challenge, especially as you talk about some of these more aggressive renewable energy futures. It's going to take a lot of infrastructure investment to really enable grids that are majority wind, solar, and storage, and we need to focus on those things now.
Yes, you know, money's always an issue, and the trouble oftentimes with these tax credits is that people need to plan these well in advance, and if they're not in place for a long time, it's hard to have any predictability in the market. You said these tax credits expire this year, but they prolonged them for 1 year. Do they end after that, or is there some long-term direction there?
Yeah, it's a good question. So as it currently stands, the tax credits were extended at the end of 2019 for wind projects and a couple of other technologies. Those credits are set to expire again at the end of 2020. And after that, you know, it's kind of a guessing game of where things will land. There could be, you know, in an extender's package, an extension of these tax credits, but it's an unknown at the moment.
Is that partially the reason for having such a good quarter? Is everybody tried to rush in to get these credits?
Well, you know, the way that the tax credit structure is set up, the projects that are coming online this year were projects that qualified actually 4 years ago. You mentioned the long lead times that these projects need and a lot of the development and construction activity that goes into them. That four-year window is a big reflection of that. So yes, for that subsegment of projects that qualified 4 years ago, there is this big rush to bring them online. And, you know, with the COVID issues that we've seen, having that additional flexibility to actually bring them online next year and still qualify for the credits is important. The credits are, you know, like I said, they're set to phase down and out this year. But we're going to still see some effects from those tax credits because you do have that 4 year window to bring projects online. So projects that qualified back in 2018, we'll see those come online next year. Projects that qualified last year, we'll see those come online in 2024. So, you know, there will be some longer term effects of those tax credit extensions, where any additional extensions would have an impact is kind of in the later part of this decade.
Well, you touched on something that was offshore wind turbines, and that's an area that looks like it's having continual growth. We did a story on how big they can build these offshore wind turbines. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so the offshore wind segment is super interesting at the moment. And if you look at our advanced development category of projects, a large portion of that is made up of offshore wind projects. We're currently tracking close to 9 gigawatts of projects that are set to come online by 2026. And, you know, as you think about that industry or that new segment of the industry, you know, one of the important things to applaud, I think, is the state leadership on this front. States along the Northeast coast have set, you know, somewhat aggressive offshore wind targets for this decade. And that's really helping to provide some of that policy support and long-term planning ability for these companies to, you know, feel safe in investing in what is still a relatively young and nascent industry. And as a result, I mean, you just have to look at it, kind of the who's who of companies that are getting involved in this space. We saw BP, one of the largest oil and gas giants, get involved earlier this year with the tie-up with Equinor. We saw Ørsted, formerly Dong Energy, out of Denmark, another big oil and gas player. You know, they're one of the leading players in the offshore wind space. Shell Energy is involved. And then we've also seen some of the traditional wind players be, you know, make big bets on this industry as well, whether it's Avangrid or EDP Renewables. So, you know, that state support and policy guidance that they've been providing is really starting to marshal in a tremendous investment and job creation opportunity along the Northeast coast.
Well, it's hard to talk about renewable energy and not mention policy or politics. So I thought maybe we'd end on these two questions. Is the outgoing Trump administration in the past has made some very disparaging remarks on wind energy, but in practice, it doesn't seem like it's impacted the industry. What's your perspective?
Yeah, it is unfortunate that we've heard some of those remarks out of President Trump and out of the administration. But when you look at, you know, the on the ground impacts, these projects are primarily in rural parts of the country. We struck up an analysis back when President Trump was first elected, and something like 86% of the wind in the country was located in a state that President Trump carried in 2016. So, you know, these projects, the investment, the job opportunity are happening very deeply among, you know, the strongest support in his base. And at the same time, you know, the industry really does have a ton of bipartisan support. And for many of those reasons that I just mentioned, right, these are jobs that are being created in rural areas. They're helping to revitalize part of the Rust Belt. They speak to a lot of the clean energy and climate change initiatives that folks on the Democratic side of the aisle are trying to push through. This is important business activity that the Republican side of the aisle would like to see more of, and investment in kind of American energy dominance and being able to provide clean energy across the country. So it's great that we do have that bipartisan support. And as an industry, we look forward to continue to build that support and continue to create these jobs, deliver these economic benefits that have really made a difference in many of these communities across the country.
Our country has lacked a cogent, clear energy policy. With the new Biden administration, do you see that being clarified? And how do you see the future of wind energy under the Biden administration?
Yeah, so, you know, I think we're pretty excited. The Biden team has really laid out an ambitious, comprehensive approach to climate change policy. And we think it recognizes that renewable energy does have a strong ability to grow our economy in this country, create a better and cleaner environment, and also drive job creation, prosperity, and kind of more equity across the country. You know, the Build Back Better plan does have some, you know, strong clean energy targets that are a helpful benchmark in terms of moving the industry forward. And it's great to see that. And I think the focus on the jobs and the economic benefits is a winning argument to help catalyze this transition. Yes, the clean energy benefits, the climate change impact benefits that the industry can provide are great. And at the same time, we can do that while transitioning workforces, growing the economy, which is something that we definitely need.
John, thank you very much for joining us on Green Sense. And we're really happy that you had a great quarter, and we hope to see more of them.
Thank you, Robert. Appreciate being on.
That's John Hensley, AWE Vice President of Research and Analytics, talking about their recently released report on wind energy and their great third quarter. I'm Robert Colangelo. This is Green Sense. Subscribe to our podcast at greensensefarms.com and listen for the Green Sense Minute every Thursday and Saturday on News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM, WBBM Chicago.